Welcome to the Student of the Game Fire Podcast with your host, Danny B. Today's guest is Kendall Wallace. 10 years of volunteer and career experience, a backstep firefighter on 24 engine with the DC Fire Department and chief of department for Marlboro VFD Company 20 in PG County. Kendall was definitely raised right and surrounded himself with individuals who wanted to see his full potential, and it shows when you hear Kendall speak. From a young age, he knew he wanted to be a firefighter, and the ultimate goal was DC, which has now come to fruition. I thoroughly enjoyed hearing Kendall's views on the fire service, and I hope you all do too. With that, I present Mr. Kendall Wallace.
Kendall Wallace, and been in the fire department for 10 years, and how I got started was just wanting to be a fireman since I was a little kid. I knew I couldn't have an office job. That would be boring, so I knew I had to do something that would be adrenaline packed and fun to do, also rewarding.
Okay, all right. So, how did it all start? What was your process of getting into the fire service? And also, do you have any family that's in the fire service?
Well, luckily, I was born and raised in a pretty good area, Prince George's County, Maryland, which is the DC metropolitan area, which I think is one of the best, if not the best areas to be a firefighter or fireman. And I was really blessed that I had the experience and the resources around me to get into that. So I just went up to a local volunteer fire department and wanted to volunteer there, and the rest is history, basically. I learned a lot in a firehouse. I basically was raised in a firehouse, in school, high school and stuff. After school, I would go to the firehouse. They held me accountable as well as my parents and family, of course. But I joined at the age of 16. Well, actually, before that, we had like a cadet program, and I participated in that, and they held me accountable with my grades and stuff. So it was very, very structured, and my family is very, very structured, which I'm fortunate with. And I think that's kept me out of a lot of trouble and gained a lot of life experience and fire department experience. I've been there all the time.
Okay. All right. Fair enough. I can say the same as myself. That's for sure. It's always good whenever you go into a department and you see that they're holding you accountable to a standard. Everybody knows most jurisdictions or most departments in PG County have a standard. So how important was that for you to follow that?
It was very important. It's almost like a regimen that you're used to, and it sets you up for success, especially if you want to do this as a career. You know, there's standards that you can. And just being around, good firemen 24/7 and 90% of that county is just what's made me become better and kind of realize who the good players and who the bad players are. And you can learn from both. You can learn what to do and what not to do. So everybody you come across, you can learn from. Whether you think it or not, you just have to have an open head.
Definitely. Okay. All right. So here recently, I'd say it's probably been you're probably on a little over a year, right, with DC?
Yep.
So at what point did you decide, or did you always know, like, deep down, hey, if I go career, DC is where it's at, or did you try any other places?
So I was actually employed by a suburban fire department in Maryland for 4 years, not PG County. It's a place called Anne Arundel County. Worked there for 4 years. I got hired at the age of 19. I was really fortunate and lucky to get that experience so young. I was working with people that, raised families off of that career, and I had it at 19 years old. So been a dream, being a career firefighter was a dream of mine. But ultimately, yes, I wanted to be a District of Columbia fireman. I knew that since I was 16. Going back to the volunteer world, a lot of guys that volunteer or have volunteered in Prince George's County are District of Columbia firefighters. And that's just something I knew that I wanted to follow as far as that path and their knowledge. Like 9.9 out of 10 of the guys that I knew that were volunteers and then worked in DC were guys you looked up to, top-notch firemen, knowledgeable. Just something you want to strive to.
Okay. If you can you describe what the Academy for DC is like? Because I know they do different types of hiring. I know you'll see ads that they're looking for experienced firefighters, EMT, paramedics. Sometimes it's a flyer of you don't need to have any experience. So can you describe what that whole process is like?
Yeah, there's a couple of different umbrellas when they hire. You'll see the most often you probably see is they're them hiring for firefighter paramedics. Is that's exactly what it is. If you have your national registry paramedic, they'll take you, do all the fire training, the same fire training as the cadet program and then the regular firefighter EMTs. But you get hired based off of having that national registry paramedic. You and DC has a lot of what you call paramedic engines. So unlike other areas or places where if you get your medic, it's kind of like a an ambulance. You're on an ambulance for the medics. One of the best in the area. Even though I'm not a medic, I know medics who are good dudes and good firemen, and use the fire truck most often, and that's versus in the other area. The firefighter EMT one, that's how I got hired. I was not a cadet or a medic, so that one is, no experience is needed, and you apply. It's from the biggest pool of people, so I'm very. Even more fortunate to be given the opportunity to work there because thousands of people apply to a metropolitan major city fire department, and you have to compete, test high on the written, pass CPAT, do all of that stuff, interview, of course, and that's how they select people like that. Previously, they were doing a written test every 4 years. The biggest ones of recent like that were in 2015 and 2019. I took the 2019 test and I got hired in 2022. Some people waited longer. I know guys on a job that waited 7, 10 years. So that is the biggest pool and the hardest pool to get pulled from, I believe. And then because of just the amount of people and their cadets. Or a city resident, graduated from a high school in the city, and you're in between a certain age range. I don't know if it's 17 through 21 or 22 or 18 through 22 or something like that. But it's around there, and they you're in that smaller group of people because you are city resident, graduated from a DC school. Like there's certain parameters that you have to meet to get in there. And then they go through the same recruit training as us. So like recently there have been bigger classes where you had firefighter medics, the regular firefighter EMTs in that general pool that we talked about, and then the cadets all training together because when we run fires and run these runs, there's no difference. So you're all one department and should know everything. Getting on about life in the academy is we leave early, so we get there early in the academy. Like everything that I learned in the academy, you can translate to what we do out in the companies. And that is not, cliche or anything. Like we kept the hose beds tight. You'll see companies that take pride and are good, their hose beds are tight. We wash the fire truck weekly, wax them. That culture is a pride and wanted to belong there is strong, and it's formed at the training school. Firefighting, right? So we were pulling lines and throwing ladders at nausea, forcing doors at nausea. They have three or four different props on how to do one thing, so you don't get used to one thing. Unfortunately, you can't have like 15 burn buildings. You kind of learn the layout, but everything else there's multiple of different instructors, subject matter experts, right? So good truck guys are teaching the truck stuff, and then the good wagon guys or engine guys are teaching the engine stuff, and you get different avenues and different ways of thinking. So you got a dude from teaching from Southeast, and then you got a dude teaching from Northwest, even though, you know, it's still one department, but you get different ideas and different obstacles they may come across, and you soak that knowledge all in, and wherever you go is something in the back of your head. And then like masking up with gloves on, it's just a very aggressive department, and training is very important. Like I worked yesterday out in the company, and we were at the training school for 5 hours. It's going over, you know, stuff like Metro, hooking up the FDCs that failed, this variety of things. We're always training and we're busy too, so it's crazy. I love it. It's a great atmosphere to be around.
No, it definitely sounds like it for sure. Before I ask you the next question, I'm gonna have you do me a favor, because like the parts were there where you're talking really good, it's like the internet starts breaking up. So with my experience, if you turn off your camera but just keep the mic on, it'll go a little bit smoother.
Like that?
Yep, perfect. All right, cool. All right, so like, because I just want the listeners to be able to hear everything you're saying, because everything you're saying is great, and I just don't want that blah, 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 that little glitch feedback is every once in a while I'd hear that. So definitely, okay. It sounds like your academy is – well, I mean, if anybody knows anything about DC, and of course every department has issues, but most of your companies, man, they're squared away, dialed in 100% into the job, which is fantastic. And I love how you talk about how from the jump, from the start, once you walk onto that training academy, these are the standards and expectations that must be met.
Absolutely. It's the deputy fire chief for training. And the battalion fire chief for training are talking to you your first day at the academy. I should go. There's a family night where the chief of the department, and then the deputy fire chief for training and the battalion fire chief for training give you a whole, like, a presentation of what your family should expect the next, you know, 4 to 8 months, or however long your process is. And especially that carries into probation. So we get to say 18 months where your life is the District of Columbia Fire Department.
That's awesome. That's cool. I mean, that way your family knows, like, hey, you're going to have a little bit of time away, but this is why, the reasoning behind it. And like the whys are always important. So I love the fact that they address that to your family to let you know that. So that's just, you know, like I said, it's just another DC thing, which is fantastic in my opinion.
Absolutely.
So I'm going to ask you a question. First question is, what does the term aggressive mean to you?
To me, being aggressive means like you like to fight fire from the interior. You're a problem solver. But, you know, calculator, right? As we all get older, we still want to be fighting fires from the inside. But, you know, you get smarter over time, and that's what the fire department has done. If you take a look at how we fight basement fires now, right, we're still trying to do it from the interior, but we're not operating above them because we learn from them, and we are aggressive minded, but also being progressive in how we do things to be more efficient. So I think everybody, when they hear the word aggressive, they think, oh, freelancing, cowboys. No, you could be very aggressive and be the smartest person. You could be smarter than that person critiquing what you think the word aggressive is. So that's what I think aggressive is. And, you know, maturing in the fire service takes time to realize the true meaning of aggressive.
No, definitely. Definitely right on that. So you are a member of Company 20 as well in PG County. That I'm assuming, is that where you started your volunteer career?
Yep.
Okay. So you've been
Never
there.
volunteered anywhere else.
And how long have you been with Company 20?
Over a decade.
Okay, over a decade. So my question to you is, at what point did you believe that you were ready to rise up to the rank that you are in currently? Because I mean that is big shoes to fill. That is a big rank to hold where you're currently at. So I'm sure you had mentors and people guiding you through the way, showing you, hey, this is what you do, this is what you don't do, what I learned from past chiefs and whatnot. But like when I and I'm not sure how the like if you're voted in or by the membership or by the board, but like when did you tell yourself like, hey, I can do this?
That's a very loaded question. At one point, I was not confident in myself of ever been an officer or a driver or anything like that. And it took this. I told myself I would never be an officer until I'm a driver. And people were pressuring me to become an officer, not just in my department, but in other areas that operated with me. Like, dude, you got what it takes to become an officer. You got what it takes to become an officer. And I was just like, nah, I want to go to more fires. I want to, be more of an asset to my company or before I'm in charge, so to say, right? So I became a driver, and that's when I'll give a lieutenant a shot, and then we're going to fires. Feel comfortable. I was already comfortable acting as an officer before then, but once I knew how to fulfill all the roles on a fire truck, I felt way more comfortable. And it all starts of being a good backstep fireman. So I was appreciative of myself. Not being gung ho to be an officer, because the knowledge that I gained while riding backwards or driving is very beneficial to me, to this day. So, became a lieutenant, went to fires, wasn't too much different than, being a firefighter. Just you were, had a little bit more responsibility, different helmet color, to me at least. Once I became a captain, though, it was different. Started helping people learn how to drive, and sending out emails and speccing out apparatus. The jump to captain was a eye opener. And then spent 2 years as a assistant chief. That was to me, honestly, that wasn't of a bigger jump from lieutenant to captain and captain to assistant chief. But you still learn things. You're operating out of a car or a buggy. You're in charge of fire grounds, and once again, having that foundation of listening to fires, listening to your mentors, and been going to fires. You kind of know where people belong on a fire ground, and you have general orders, which both jurisdictions I operate at have very good organized general orders. Once you learn those, and then never lose that element of where would you, where do you need a line, where do you need hooks at, where search is needed, securing utilities. Once you have that foundation, it's all bringing it together, right? You're just the offensive coordinator. You're not the quarterback anymore. You're the offensive coordinator. Being in the buggy is very, very cool. Sometimes you still get to play and be a division supervisor, get dressed, supervise the division or group, and still feel like you're being a fireman even more, even though you're not on the line or riding a bar or anything. You still get to, put a face piece on. That's always a good day. And we're and then my position now is just more admin duties. So talking to chiefs, talking to lawyers, talking to the people that really run businesses, and that's what the firehouse is, the business. So you got to learn how to wear so many different hats, still be personable with the guys on the floor, personable with people from different departments and different walks of life, and know how to communicate with all of them.
I like how you put it. It was put very eloquently and very intelligently, man. So that's and if you don't mind me asking, which I mean, I'm sure if people know you, they know. But for those that don't know, how old are you?
I'm 26 years old.
26 years old. 26 years old and like the mindset of a 45-year-old, man. That's awesome. And it's not like shade or anything thrown at you, dude. It's just you don't see very many 26-year-olds with their head on their shoulders like that. The way you talk about the fire service, what's important, that's just it's beautifully stated, man.
A lot of people say I'm years above, where I am. That's just the mentors. Like, I've had many bad talkings to the make me who I am now. There's been a lot of accountability from my mentors. They're like, yo, what are you doing? You know you can't do that. Like, and you have to take that. It's just like it takes a village to raise a kid, right? It takes a village to raise a fireman and a leader. So
No,
I'm very fortunate
I
for that.
love it. No, I love it, man. I do. I really do. And I love how you mentioned, in the beginning, you were like, am I really ready? That's like a question that all of us ask ourselves at some point, whether you're going up for a promotion, a different shift assignment, whether you want to put a transfer in, there's always that little doubt that goes like, am I ready? Are you sure? And you just jump with both feet right in, continue taking your classes that you need to get better at this profession, man. So it definitely shows.
Appreciate that.
In your opinion, do you think should there be a years of service clause for promotion?
Yeah, I think so.
And why, if you don't mind me asking.
It's just, the structure of things. You I don't think anybody, if you come into this job, volunteer career, in 2 years, you're not ready to leave. You may be a good fireman, you've been on a lot of fires, but for 2 years, I think 2 years is too soon, 5 years may be too long. Most departments around here, the one that I work for and the one that I did work for, it's 3 years to be a technician, which is like a leadership position. You're in charge of the apparatus. You usually lead a company drill. You're the most familiar with the area probably. And technician is a really important job. And I think that the 3 year parameter on that, it's really good, especially if you have prior experience and you're a good person. And then most are 5 years to be a low level officer, whether that's a lieutenant or sergeant, company dependent, or I'm sorry, department dependent. That has to be to me, that has to be a busy 5 years, especially if you come on with no experience. And I'm not picking on anybody with no experience, but a lot of metropolitan departments have guys that have a lot of volunteer experience or a lot of past career experience or both, and that does hold weight, even though like you never tell anybody. You should never tell anybody what you did and let your actions speak for you. But if you've been around long enough, you can tell, oh, this guy may have 2 years on, but he's been doing this longer than 2 years. Like, it does not take a rocket scientist to figure that out. And I think you just have to, wait your time in your department when you want to promote. It's just a standard thing.
Right. Okay. So, a personal question I kind of always ask guests are within the DC department that you're in, where would you like to see yourself at?
That
Like
changes. That
down the
changes.
line.
Yeah, that down the line, thinking that changes for me week to week. One day I'm like, oh, somebody's like, you're gonna be a battalion chief. I'm like, I don't know. One day I'm like, I'll stop at captain, and then one day, if I get a wagon driver spot, I'm content with that. So it's just like all ends of the spectrum for me. But lately, I've been thinking, if I don't retire as a, at least as a lieutenant, I would be disappointed in myself. I don't know if that's a hard standard or if I'm too hard on myself. But I think if I don't, retire at least as a lieutenant, I could have done better. But right now, I'm still young. I like to stretch lines and put fires out, so I'm not even thinking about that career-wise right now. But I'd be a fool to not think about it down the road,
Okay. All right. And you're on one of the busiest engines in DC. So far, what has been and the thing is, you come from departments that aren't slow call wise. So was it a little bit of a shock to see exactly how many runs Engine 24 does, or were you just like, oh, okay, I've heard about it, I'm kind of used to it, it's not really that big of a deal?
when I got hired by DC, I was expecting to get destroyed every day. So those days where we are busy, I expected. And the days where we're not so busy, I'm like, oh, you feel better. Your body does, but always want to go to fires. I love running, even the AFAs and the medicals. You learn the buildings. My wagon driver makes me drive some days, just so, because we don't have map books or anything. So they're like, all right, you're driving to this. You're like, oh snap, like you think you're just chilling in the back of the fire truck getting there. Now, you got to get up there. It's just the standard there is very high, very tight-knit group of people, and one of the best engine companies in the city. The area, the buildings are very old, not a lot of FDCs. You have these older apartments that were built in the 30s through the 50s. No sprinklers, and a lot of the fire protection is not was not as good as it is now. So it's a good area. We have everything, row homes, commercial fronts, apartment buildings, anything you could think of, movie theaters, funeral homes, like metro stations, anything you could think of, is in the first due, and definitely in the second or third due. So the building construction there has been a bigger shocker to me, if anything, other than just the city life.
Okay. All right. What has been your busiest shift so far since you've gotten there? How many runs were put in the books?
I think I'll stop counting now, but I think we've got up to over 20, 20, 22. About, that's a for there's busier engine companies, but we're definitely we get our bang for our buck. What people call the fire to medical ratio is outstanding there. It's not that I have anything against medicals, but that's how you learn, oh, this building doesn't have FDCs, or there's a hoarder in this apartment, or these are long hallways. We might need to stretch more than a cross lay. We might need to stretch to 350 or to 400. You learn that on the medical. And I'm still a good person. I don't want, I still take care of people and I care for people. But at 24 engine, I think you get that good fire to medical ratio is the best.
All right. Okay. And another personal question. Engine or truck?
For me, engine all day.
All day. Okay. Because I was going to say at Company 20, there's also a squad. So I didn't know if you had a favorite, a passion for one or the other.
No, the engine company is for me is just nothing's better than being on the line on a good fire. I have At 20, we do have a rusty spot, like you said, and I've been to a fair amount of fires searching ahead of hose lines and cutting cars and stuff. So that is a good experience, and it's helped me grow as far as being an officer and being and learning fire conditions. Because when you're kind of, when you're on a hose line, yeah, you should know fire conditions, but if you don't like it, flow water, you could change that. But when you are on a special service like a truck or a rescue squad, you may find yourself without the hose line protection. So having that experience of searching a room or operating without or before a hose line is paramount to your experience and knowledge of operating on a fire floor.
Okay. All right. So what you're saying is you're an engine guy through and through.
Yes.
Okay. All right. No issues with that at all. this kind of goes towards the your volley department. What do you think, or what do you see that departments can do better wise for recruitment and retention? And I'm not sure if you guys are if PG has this problem, just because PG's known for the fires, for the calls, for the action. So, are you guys seeing any recruitment type issues?
Very much so. My department included in the whole county. Just people having to work with the way the economy is and inflation and everything. It's just, it's hard to get people to do something for free. And then people have families now. So once people have kids and get married or move away, because living near or in Prince George's County is expensive because it's close to DC. The cost of living is high. So people move out, they move to, three counties away or into another state, and it's hard to get them to commit to volunteer. But there has been, the county's hired a recruiter. Departments have their own recruitment committee. We tell them, hey, look, man, I start with you applying today. That's where I started. And now I'm a career firefighter and I still volunteer to this day. And there's incentives you get like tax breaks, LOSAT, which is a length of service award, kind of like a retirement, but not like a retirement as much as far as much as money. But there are incentives there, and you have to relay that to the people that are getting into that, like, work comes first, because work comes first to me. That's how you pay the bills, and that's how you eat. But you want that experience.
No, definitely.
Like, and the best firefighters I know have done that or do it. They've lived at a firehouse for years, or they were at a firehouse more than 2 days a week. Because you get that exposure.
Right.
And that's what I try to relate to newer members.
Okay. Love it. Love it. next topic, leadership. It's a perfect topic for you. Like you said earlier, you have a bunch of mentors that, have taught you not the way, but a way to do things. And especially nowadays with, you see leadership is a big topic within the fire service or a lack thereof. What does leadership mean to you?
Leadership means that, that person is going to have your back, hold you accountable, train you. They're going to be knowledgeable. But, they don't know, have to know everything, right? You may know more than your leader, but still being able to be a good leader is to facilitate everybody, their weaknesses and strengths, and make that team a cohesive group. And operate well together. But it is good to, if you're going to be a leader, to be knowledgeable, be a good person, know how to talk to people, know how to talk to people with different backgrounds, right? So you go on runs or calls and you have to talk to a homeless guy. You go on another run or call, you may have to talk to a multi-million dollar company business owner, right? You may have to talk to somebody that is, that has different beliefs than you. And, you just have to communicate effectively the mission of your department and then your members, right? People are more sensitive nowadays. I can say that because I'm young. Some people might classify me in that group as all of y'all are more sensitive. Well, people now want to be talked to with respect. You could still have a standard, but people don't like to be disrespected while you're holding them to that standard. So, being a leader is knowing how to effectively convey your message in a respectful way, and just be a good person. That's the number one thing. If you're a good person and a good fireman on top of that, you could be a good leader.
Okay. All right. And with you being a chief officer, what are your expectations for anybody at Company 20? It's one of those lost in translation type deals where some chiefs think that the members know what the expectations are or the standards when there really isn't one. So with that being said, do you have standards when you meet a new member or a new member comes onto Company 20?
My personal things are, just having pride. That starts, with cleaning up the fire truck. The base should always look good, and then you're gonna see the guys that have been there longer than you are doing it. So naturally, like if you see other people doing something, you're gonna migrate to that. So I'm harder on the guys that have been there more than the newer guys, because you're naturally going to follow what you see. If I see people lounging around all day and not taking the job seriously, career volunteer, that's what you're going to flock to. That's why it's so important going to a good company. You get brainwashed into it, right? Re whether you like it or not, you're going to become a product of your environment. So anybody that is a member there, I want them to lead by example. You go up there, I'm still known for shining fire trucks up wherever I work or volunteer. I ride a clean fire truck, and it doesn't matter what rank I hold, I'll always have that mindset, and people follow that and they see it. And they want to be like that, and you just naturally bring the standard up as you're doing the right thing.
No, I love it. I love it, and I love the fact that, yeah, you're right. If anyone follows your social media, they see it. A chief that's still putting tire shine on the truck, polishing, waxing the wheels. I mean, like there are chiefs out there that do that, but it's not very often though that you see that. So the fact that you've never forgotten where you came from, I think also speaks volumes.
Absolutely. Always stay humble. You have your moment. That's why, like, those mentors come in check, right? They're like, all right, man, you're doing too much, and it's not loud. See, and some people like to correct people loudly, but not praise them loudly. And that's a toxic leadership trait that you have to watch out for. You should be praising people loudly and then discipline them or correcting them privately, so they're not embarrassed. And I've had a lot of correcting and keeping me in line throughout my life and through the fire department, definitely.
Okay. All
Career
right.
volunteer.
Okay. Communication amongst the rank and file. It's my opinion that most successful departments, whether volunteer, career, part-time, it doesn't matter, the ones that are successful, communication is always paramount between, the chief all the way down to the newest firefighter and in reverse order. So in your opinion, does communication, do you believe communication plays a factor?
100%. Some people may get annoyed at me. Ever since, I've been the chief officer, I've been very paramount. I've gotten a lot of complaints about, not me per se, but the department. The we're not hearing enough from the leadership. Like we're there, but we don't know what's going on. So one of my goals lately have been to, at every monthly meeting we give a report. I say that report, and I also send it out on paper. So if somebody wasn't at the meeting, or they didn't hear, or they couldn't make the meeting, they can go and see my email or something that I put on the page where all the members can see. So there's you let I let them know what we did this month, our goals, and where we're what we have coming up. Any training, like if Memphrey puts out anything, I relay that message. I send a lot of emails. I forward everything that I get from people from different departments, and send them down the chain so nothing's kind of blindsided. And people appreciate that. So they even if it's something new that they have to do another standard or something like a Target Solutions or something, they are appreciative that you let them know ahead of time instead of right at that deadline. They're like, okay, I can work with that. I'll get it done. So communication is very important. And then you have to be approachable too. So things go on when people don't feel like they can approach their leader or their officer. So if you're not approachable, you're still there.
Yeah, I kind of lost you a little bit. I lost you just before you were talking about if you're not approachable.
Okay. Yeah, if you're not approachable, that's how problems start. And you can't fix them, or you find out too late to fix them. So you have to remain approachable, no matter if you're a fire chief, a lieutenant, sergeant, it doesn't matter. Even a senior firefighter, remain approachable. So things could get squashed before they become a big deal.
Definitely, definitely. And I'm assuming you also hold the officers under you accountable as well, as far as communication, because that could be one bad thing where you expect the personnel under you to also relay the message. But if there's no communication between y'all, how do you expect the rest of the department to know that?
Right, and that's been a problem before. I'd be a fool or to say that hasn't been a problem. And my biggest deal with that is it's just you may duplicate the work. I may have done something, or vice versa, and we just worked hard for no reason because we both did the same thing where we just could have done it one time, and that's not very efficient.
Definitely. Definitely. Okay. All right. as far as your training, and I'm not talking DC, but through Company 20, what kind of realistic training do can you guys do on a small budget? I'm not sure what your budget is, but in today's age and time, volunteer companies usually have a budget. Sometimes it's very small. So what do you guys do to give the your members the most realistic training they can get?
Fortunately, we have good equipment as far as what's on the apparatus. We did have a fire in the firehouse recently, but before that we had good rope rescue things. We're not a technical rescue company, but we have just as good of stuff as them as far as the basic things, setting up a Z-rig, a 4-to-1 and stuff like that. So we're able to pull that stuff out and just drill with it if you want, no matter the time or day. And just company stuff, we have wagon, we pull lines, and we can, where our area is like 95% hydrant in our first year, and then 5% we do have rural water or relay operation. We can go out somewhere and draft, or we can go out and practice sleeve hydrants. I think people get hemmed up too much to train, because if you have enough budget between a fire truck and your geographic area and train, fortunately, when you do talk about getting classes and stuff, we have the Maryland Fire Rescue Institute, which is known as MFRI, and it's a top-notch organization. It's pretty notable throughout the country, as far as being a staple to training volunteer and career members. And they offer classes for everything, and you could pro board them. So you know everything from firefighter one to building collapse to high angle rescue to hazmat technician. It doesn't, you know, the limit is, you know, the availability of classes and your schedule. But if you want something, you can get it. And it's free if you're a volunteer or your work pays for it.
Okay. All right. Cool. Love hearing that. Love hearing that. Which characteristic holds more weight in your opinion? Years of service, education, work ethic, or on the job experience?
I can only pick one.
You can actually order them, like, in your opinion, like what's most important down to least important.
I think the work ethic is the most important because you can be brand new, and if you have a strong work ethic, naturally you're gonna get that experience. And then it's work ethic, you're gonna want more classes, or you're gonna get the education. And if a strong work ethic, you're going to get those years of service because you want to be in a firehouse, you want to be in a fire department, and you want to go to fires. So the work ethic is an umbrella to me that will cover all of those things. So I think that's the most important because of that.
Okay, and I have to agree. Like you said, you stated earlier, you know, you can have the newest green person out there, man, but if they have that drive to want to be better, to, you know, if they see trash on the floor, they pick it up, they go empty the trash cans, they see something wrong with the bat, anything that has to that they do without being told that they have to do it, I think goes a very, very long way, because you can't you that's something to me you can't teach it. Like, humans, people are gonna be the way they are by the way they were brought up or by the way they live their life. You know what I mean? Like, there's OCD type clean people, and then there's clean people, and then there's people that just don't care. So I have to firmly agree, like, you cannot teach that is something that has to be instilled in you.
Absolutely. And even if the person is not very clean, you can, you know, teach them how to this the fire, police, and the military is a very group of people. And mostly because we go through academy or boot camp and seniority. So even if somebody comes from a non-structured life, you can work with them and be patient and like, this is what we do, and then the why. This is why we do it. So when somebody comes here, we don't want this place to look messy, and it makes us look good. You know, why do we keep the fire truck clean? Because you go to the community, you want, they don't want to see a fire truck that's dirty, or you know, you're beating somebody in their first few. You want to look good, right? The hose bin looks good, the tires are shining. Oh, that company is squared away. It's all about the.
During our conversation, we had a technical glitch in communication. Technology, right?
I'm sorry, where were you? Was that me? I don't know what that was.
I don't know. It just glitched. It's fine. You were talking about before we lost connection real quick, you were talking about how, you know, if you're beating the first due company in that, you know, the hose bed's tight.
Yeah, so the reputation of, you know, the hose bed is tight, the tires are shine, the paint is shiny, it's waxed. You know, if you're doing the right things, you want to look good too doing so. It's just been part of a squared away group, and then people are naturally gonna want to be part of that company, because even if they didn't want to go there, or there are busier companies, you know that hey, we may not be the busiest or whatever, but we look good, and then we are making these busier companies look bad because we perform better than them, because they may get the reps out in the street. But when we do have the reps, we take them more seriously on, you know, on what we call street alarms or triple locals, which is basically a reduced box alarm. You get like a report of odor, smoke only, or a socket smoking or appliance on fire or fire contained to the oven. Those are what we call street alarms or triple locals. The companies that treat them like box alarms, when it is a box alarm, you could tell, hey, they just don't stretch on box alarms. They're stretching on AFAs, they're stretching on street alarms, triple locals, things like that. You could definitely tell, or they're stretching around the first two or in the firehouse.
Okay, definitely love
And
it. I
people get,
love
even the laziest person, if they want to be there, they're going to be like, all right, got to suck it up. And for these 2 hours, we're drilling. And then they're like, oh, I'm glad I drilled. Like, yeah, like I'm not trying to kill you,
Right.
but you're naturally going to get better without even knowing it.
Right. Yeah. No, you're right. You're right. That's the thing. Yeah. If you could get that person to buy in, and sometimes you can try everything under the sun that you know of, and some people just won't get it. They don't want to get it. And
Absolutely.
sometimes you just got to know when to cut your losses. I know some people don't like that phrase, but listen, if you've given the individual every single chance under the sun, hey, this is how we do it. If you don't want to do it, obviously this company or this organization or department might not be for you.
Absolutely. And the companies in DC, while you're on probation and stuff, you can't wear anything that is affiliated with that company. You can only wear things that say DCFD, but you can't wear a shirt that says Engine 24 or Engine 15, wherever you're assigned. Just the notable companies that people know. Just naming some. But at those companies, usually until you're off probation, you're not attached to us other than on the roster. You have to earn your keep, right? So you have to, do your duties as a probationer, go to fires, make the company and yourself look good on those fires, and just prove yourself as a private, And then once you become a private, they, you get a shield. You can wear stuff that says where you're signed, and you could claim that company and that reputation. And that's all a thing, right? So it's the reputation. Like, if somebody says, oh, I'm here, and they are not a good employee, or they failed to post on the fire or whatever, that makes that company look bad. That reputation goes down. So that's all the reason. And it makes you earn something. Like, you see the light at the end of the tunnel, because being a probationer and going through academy is no easy feat. Whether you have experience or not, it's something to be proud of, especially good departments, because they hold you to such a high standard, and they let you know, like, you get a good handshake and like, congrats, dude, like, you went through your probation process, everybody's done it, and you get a sense of well-being and belonging in the company.
Definitely. Okay. I mean, me personally, I kind of like that tradition. You have to earn your keep. Now I will say though, if you go through a long academy, obviously you have proven, or at least to me, that company should know, hey, okay, this guy's proven that he really wants it. Now, whoever you're assigned with, now they want to see how you're actually going to perform out in the streets, because unfortunately we have people that will go all out in the academy to get through it, and then once they skate through, it's like low hanging fruit, man. Their true side will be seen. And unfortunately we have people like that. They make it through what they got to do, and then they hit the relax mode button for a while.
Yep, and it's happened to me, right? So there's been days or months when I was on probation where I was, not putting my putting I was putting a lot of effort in. I would definitely say that, but my wagon driver, my officer, definitely held me to a standard. Like, hey, let's pick it up a little bit more. And you're like, oh yeah, you're right. You say yes, sir, or yes, ma'am, but in your head, like, yeah. I do need to pick it up a little bit more. And you just don't see that because, not every day you're 100%, not every week or month you're going to be 100%. You still have a personal life, and they know that. But, people just do what they have to do, and they don't do anything more than that. So, like, even studying the area and our probation, you have to know the boxes which are, intersections, basically, where the old pole boxes were. And then you have to know certain short streets that are assigned to you by your driver and or your officer or a senior guy. So you got those every month, and you had to memorize them verbatim, left on this, right on that, left on this, to box. And then you had to name your, especially us as an engine company, you had to name your two closest hydrants. And then for tradition, I had to know the box number. And that's just, the tradition of the DCFD, knowing your hydrants, knowing verbatim how to get there. You had to drive them on your days off, send pictures to people. Hey, I'm at box 8161, and these are the two closest hydrants. And then it was specific to, in that intersection where a hydrant was, what corner of the intersection. So you had your direction that was in the northwest corner of the intersection. That was in the southeast corner of the intersection. So you're so specific to where your areas are. And that makes it even better and worthwhile accomplishing. And it makes you better.
Definitely. Definitely. Like I said, man, I love hearing the traditions that DC does from, for them to give you a location on your off day says a lot. Like, if you really want this, you're going to do it. Cause some people are going to be like, off day. Well, I'm not being paid to do this. I'm not going to do it. But the fact that they have traditions such as that, such as you wait a year until you get to be able to wear your company apparel, from writing calls in your logbook to doing watch desk duties, like just everything about, I love that the traditions are still being held, because unfortunately you have some departments, some areas of the country where that tradition is going away, and traditions is what fire departments were built upon. So at least for me, that's just my opinion.
Yep. Yeah. And there's historical traditions that are really cool to me. So the riots were a big thing. When Martin Luther King got assassinated, a lot of DC, specifically the 4th Battalion, burnt down around the U Street corridor and the Georgia Avenue corridor. And the first historic, or the first firehouse where African Americans worked, was a 4-Engine, which is first due to the HBCU Howard University. I'm honestly not sure if that had any reasoning why, but just knowing that, that firehouse is, two, three first dues away, but literally 2 miles away because the it's so congested up there. But knowing that you're so close to that is crazy. And then they have journals there. So there, some firehouses have journals back up into the earliest I've seen is 1920s. So you can see the chiefs in your organization and that organization where they were working at as a private. It's pretty cool.
Okay. No, that's awesome. That's awesome, man. Like I said, I can talk to DC dudes for hours, man, just on different things, the way they, different, just the way they operate, man. I love it. I saw, I think it was the other day, I saw, I think it's Tower 3. They got their old bucket from the Seagrave and they turned it into like a desk area. Like, you don't see that stuff. And it's the members that are, that are refurbing it, repolishing it, like making it pristine. Like I personally love it. I'm sure there's others out there that do, so they don't think I'm weird, but like, I just love hearing that.
Yep. And actually sitting in that bucket on watch is even more crazy. That was off of their 2003 aerial scope. They got one in 2018. They're the only tower in the city. And that firehouse houses the Deputy Fire Chief of Operations. And then there's also a whole bunch of other officers there. So that firehouse it looks like a museum if you walk inside of it. It's first due to the White House. So, it's probably the most important house in anybody's first due in America. It's just that having that is the it speaks for itself. But there's other parts of the city. I was just like you when I wanted to be a DC. Like I could talk to DC guys for hours, and I still can. I still do. And it's crazy being one now because I was 14 years old looking up to these guys. Like, wow, they get to, work there and do that, and now you're there.
Right.
It's I lived a life. Like, there's not much I can ask for.
Awesome, man. I appreciate you coming on, man, taking some time to do this. Definitely talking, dropping gems, good knowledge, man. Like I said, you have such a great head on your shoulders, man. I know you will go far in whatever you decide to do, whatever position you decide to go for. So I just want to say, keep doing your thing, man. Like you got people rooting for you, me, for sure. So, I really can't wait to see what the future holds for you, pal.
I appreciate you, man. And you too. You always talk about how your department isn't busy and stuff, but that has nothing to do with how you carry yourself no matter what. So
Definitely,
I see you
definitely.
shining the tower. Yeah, I see you shining the tower on driving today, getting reps, setting up on AFAs, and the people around you, I'm sure, are better because of that. So keep doing what you're doing as well.
Man, I appreciate it.
And this was hard for me. Yeah, this is hard for me because I know people are gonna make fun of me. Well, oh, you're on a podcast today, blah blah blah. And but people do want to hear what I have to say, and it's just I try to stay humble, and I don't know if that helps or hurts me sometimes because I feel like I can be better at passing on knowledge to younger people, right? So a
Right.
lot of people say, oh, the fire service needs more people like me. And whether that's right or wrong, I still feel like I need to get better at just knowing I'm not perfect. And so the reason that I try to shy away from teaching others or helping others is because I know I'm not perfect. I'm going to make mistakes. So I feel like, oh, he's making a mistake. Why is he telling me something? So that's the main reason why I try to stay humble and low key. And I didn't want to do this interview while I was on probation, or it's just not me really. And maybe I need to get out of that shell. But I appreciate you for being approachable and making me comfortable while doing this, because talking about myself is difficult, especially in the fire service, because there's always somebody more notable or better than you, or in a better place. So at least, listening to me made me feel better talking about it.
Oh no, definitely, man. Like I said, and that's the thing. Anytime I reach out to anyone, like just a regular fireman, they're like, "You sure? Like, why me?" And it's like, "Well, why not you? You got a message to spread." I mean, as long as it's positive and telling people like, "Hey, it's okay to go out and train to get better, to love the job, man." I think everybody has value and everybody has something to say, that they can bring to the table. So I just want to say thank you, and I really appreciate it. Your humbleness shows, man. And like I said, I truly believe the people who you have been around that have kind of helped shape, mold you in a way like, hey, this is the direction you need to go, have definitely done a fantastic job.
Absolutely. That's my parents included. Brothers, cousins, sister-in-laws, like, or I say sister-in-laws, like I have multiple, just one of those. But just the family first. My family definitely provided me that background of being respectful and appreciating the people that are teaching you something, to relay that into the fire service. And then, in the fire service, the fire chief of Marlboro, the presidents of Marlboro, the officers of Marlboro that come before me, and then the DC Fire Department, which so most of the officers were DC firefighters. So, the technicians that I come across, the lieutenants and the captains, my instructors in the training schools, have all instilled something in me to carry on. And I hope to be just like all of them and something. And to the people that may have, they're getting 5 or 10 years onto the job and think they know everything and treat people below them like crap, Just know that somebody knows something that you don't. That person knows something that you don't. So whether it's a life thing or a fire department thing, so you can learn from guys younger than you. And me being so young, and I look young, because I am. But the knowledge that I humbly have gained is crazy. Yeah. If I saw a 26-year-old the way I am, I would be like, nah, this dude, I will overlook me. But you just get that reputation and be a good fireman and be a good person, and people are, will warm up to you and listen to you, even if they have more experience than you, even if they're a higher rank than you or been to more fires or older than you in person, just as a person. So teaching somebody that is twice my age is still crazy. Or teaching somebody that may have been to more fires than me something, because I know more of an easier way to do something or a technical skill that they don't know is crazy. And just remember, stay humble, because they can get you too.
No, definitely. That's a damn fact right there. That's a damn fact. And you're right. You alluded early, man. Like, to me, whoever brought you up, your parents, whether it's parents, grandparents, whoever the case may be, man, that's they laid the foundation down. And so everything after that is brought to fruition. So, like I said, Kendall, I truly appreciate you coming on talking shop, man.
Thanks, Danny.
Yes, sir. Thank you. You have a good day.
If any of the listeners out there are or know of a great firefighter who embodies the principles of being a great communicator, goal-oriented, hardworking, humble, passionate, and professional, regardless of rank, career, or volunteer, contact me at studentofthegamefirepodcast@gmail.com. Until next time, stay focused, stay committed, and stay safe.